co-authors at the University of Michigan, my postdoc Joseph Pujol and my colleague Joseph Eisenberg. We're at the one of the units, modeling unit for the Center for Advancing Microbial Risk Assessment. Just like the last to talk, I'm going to talk about my institution and tell you what it is, tell you what our modeling core is doing, why we're doing it, issues that our work so far has raised, and our plans for the future. So the Center for Advancing Microbial Risk Assessment is a cooperative endeavor amongst various universities. It's directed out of Michigan State and Drexel Universities, Joan Rose at Michigan State, Jeff Charles Haas at Drexel. And then all of these different universities involved, the major people are working in the area of microbial environmental microbiology, doing fate and transport kind of studies, and we are doing a transmission system modeling. There's a unit that's dedicated to dose response modeling, although we're doing a lot of dose response modeling as well, and then there's a unit dedicated to policy and behavior. And it was a great thrill to join this group, because for a long time I, as an epidemiologist, had been saying that we know so little about modes of transmission, and that was confirmed to me by all of the environmental microbiologists. So what we're doing, we're exploring modeling and statistical needs using abstract models, focusing on human dissemination of contamination. That's the kind of models we've done so far, cumulative risk for pathogen uptake, and environmental and person-to-person transmission. So we've develop models in these three areas, and then examining them for their importance in modeling and statistical needs. We're also doing realistically detailed models of transmission of influenza in dormitories. There's a trial going on at the University of Michigan and the University of Michigan dormitories, some of the kids wearing masks and some of the kids having hand wipes. And so we think that the standard ways of analyzing those trials will not be as productive as transmission model analysis. And likewise, because they're so frequent and provide an excellent basis for building up the theory and methods, we're looking at norovirus outbreaks as well. Our focus then on statistical model and method development. One reason we focus on the environment is because, almost all infections are transmitted via the environment. Only a few sexually transmitted infections that go directly, very directly. And there are a lot of different interventions that you can consider, like those considered in the dormitory trials I just mentioned. So the thing of it is that the population effects of those interventions depend on the roles in system dynamics of the different routes of transmission. It's not just how frequent the different routes of transmission are, but the roles that they play in the overall system. And that's the kind of work we're focusing on. So the other reason that we focus on is we really think that if we're going to have a really good science of infection transmission, that we need to have observations in the major areas where transmission is taking place. And after many years in the Tecumseh study was a great study. We got the most detailed study on exposures and infection and incidents that anybody ever got for infectious disease. But you cannot, from that kind of data, from data on infected individuals, examine the system and where transmission is taking place, whereas we believe that will be possible with environmental samples. Our major findings to date, the first one seems rather obvious, that the environmental dynamics of human-to-human infectious agents are always far from equilibrium. Later you're going to see that I present a model where we have instantaneous equilibrium in the environment. Models have to make simplifications, but you have to realize when those simplifications are untrue and how that might be affecting your inferences. The human movement patterns influence whether large droplet, hand fomite, or aerosol transmission dominates. That's one of our important findings. And the other thing that's extremely strong effect is that host immune particle dynamics might change the major mode of transmission. Likewise, the common modeling forms for direct contact of infectious disease models are called density and frequency dependent, and our models show that reality is not close to either one of those. So here's the kind of model that for the first two sets of findings were examined. This is a gross simplification. So we started off with three infected people. Somebody sneezes, droplets contaminate the surface. The air contamination diffuses at the same rate. The fomite and air contamination die out at their respective rates. Contamination reaches a susceptible person. The contamination of the air dilutes in the whole area. The infected people move. One susceptible person becomes infected. The contamination of the air dilutes. The remaining susceptible person moves to a cell with the fomite contamination. So here, this is just a little example of the simplest kind of thing. So this kind of thing is discrete individual, discrete event simulation modeling. And when we examine that, what do we see? We see that the optimal disease interventions depend on venue characteristics and especially on the pattern of movements. Here we say what effect you get from an air intervention versus a fomite intervention, and that depends on the movement rates. These are sort of an arbitrary scale, so I don't have time to go into realistic things. For influenza, air intervention only effective if the movement rate is very high. Now, there's been some excellent work on airborne transmission by Larry Wine recently, but it doesn't take this into account. It uses very, very different situations, and it might be changed by this. But the thing it's more likely to be changed by is this cumulative dose response information. The usual thing with dose response is just to take it directly from data using something like a Bethe-Poisson model. But the probability of infection in such a model only depends on the dose, and each dose at each instant is independent of doses at other times. But if that's the case, so a dose of 100 pathogens over 2 hours has the same outcome as 100 doses of one pathogen in 2 hours. If that's true, what's the immune system doing for those 2 hours? Strangely enough, there's almost all immune system modeling is after infection takes off. So here's our model that we're looking where we have immune particles and the pathogen particles, and we look at the discrete individual dynamics of these particles in a way that the immune particles have a baseline flux and are both recruited and destroyed by pathogens. Pathogens have an input from the environment, grow, and are destroyed by the immune particles. I'm not going to go into this very, very much. A period of time, you can take off or not take off. Here, the little dotted line gives the region where it takes off or not take off. These are starting conditions. You can see that the number of events can have a big effect on transmission probabilities. And when we fitted this to data, and then one of the amazing things is that there's thousands of dose response experiments. They're all with single-time dosing, one-time dosing. And so we miss all of this dynamics from that data. So we can fit to this single-time dosing, but we can't fit all of our parameters. So we went on to examine, in deterministic compartmental models, infection flow. And what we found is that the effective crowding is dependent on environmental survival, deposit and pickup rates, and infectivity. The dynamics can be very different from the standard models that are used. But as I mentioned before, frequency and density dependent are unlikely. So here's the last slide. What is it that we think that we're going to accomplish? Currently, we see transmission science for infectious diseases as being in this dark corner of weak science. Weak science on the dimension of the ability to repeatedly observe similar units. I mean, if you're studying cells or you're studying, things in the laboratory that you can do over and over again, but epidemics, you get one epidemic, and you have to look at it all. And also validated quantitative theory about how the system works. Our unit is especially working on this. The other units in CAMRA are especially working on improving this. But especially important is if we can study this, different organisms in the same environment, we can improve here, but also if we can define the different units of contact, the different places where transmission is taking place, and characterize them, and get, you know, more direct observation. Together with the new theory that we're building, the models that we're trying to validate in multiple different ways, we think that we can take transmission science up to the realm of a bright, shining, strong science. Thanks.